Well, my lord, I tried with Will Thodey again, but he won't say anything.
Oh, I know he won't, Superintendent. Have you arrested him?
No, my lord, I haven't. I sent him home, told him to think it over. But I'm taking the view that we'll be able to handle him better after we've interrogated his brother, Jim.
We know that Jim will be back in England any day now.
Oh, yeah. The shipping owners have been very sensible. They've given him orders to come home without saying what he's wanted for.
Good. I only wish I felt we were making some real progress towards finding out who did the actual murder.
Well, my lord, we've established most of the facts about what happened in that belfry between December 31st and January 4th.
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose so.
We know that Jeff Deacon came back after all those years to pick up the emeralds that he didn't after the robbery. We know that Cranton sent him false papers to help him get over here from France using the name Paul Taylor, right?
We also know that Nobby Cranton feared he was going to be cheated out of his share of the takings and came herein up to Fenchurch St. Paul under the name of Stephen Driver. I met him on the road as I was leaving the village, you may recall.
Well, at least there's no doubt about that bit, my lord. And Nobby Cranton finds that the cryptogram sent to him by Deacon isn't one bit of help in finding the emeralds. However, he does begin to think that there's some connection with the bells in the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he goes along to the church late at night, and there in the belfry he finds Deacon tied up and already dead.
According to our own dear Nobby. Alternative explanation, Nobby Cranton finds Deacon in the church and gets angry and wallops Deacon over the head for double-crossing him.
I accept that we already know, my lord.
The Deacon wasn't killed by a blow to the head?
Right.
Yes, true, true, true. We also know that he didn't starve to death. Oh, I'm beginning to think that we know too much. None of it seems to help.
I suppose it's possible that it was Will who killed Deacon. The motive was certainly there, and no mistake, Deacon was a nasty piece of goods. He dragged Mary's name into the dirt by stealing his employer's property to start with. Then he murders a warder while he's in jail. Then, just when Will and Mary have built a new life and they think that Deacon is long dead, up he pops like a jack-in-the-box and threatens to wreck their happiness. I can't say I'd blame Will Thodey if he just lammed Deacon one and got rid of him once and for all.
Bit of a public service, what?
Yes, my lord. Though the law's the law, and I suppose it's not really for us to say that one man has the right to kill another.
Quite. And yet you know, Bundle, the timing is all wrong for Will Thodey to have done it. We know that he was ill and bedridden on the night of the 31st. I remember it myself. I mean, that was why I spent my New Year's celebrating pulling on a bell rope, because Will Thodey was too ill and I agreed to take his place.
Yeah. But what about his strange behaviour? Running round the countryside with £200 in cash, and then there's the beer bottle left lying in the belfry, same kind as Mary had been buying during Jim Thodey's visit.
Which opens the possibility that Jim is the murderer and that Will is covering up for him. Being his brother's keeper, as it were, what?
I doubt if we'll make much progress till we've had a talk with Jim Thodey.
And even then, my dear Blundell, I would not absolutely guarantee that we make rapid progress. Oh, there's something about this case that defies rational investigation. Perhaps the rector killed Deacon, what do you think? Or Hezekiah the blacksmith, or the rector's wife? Or could it have been the foreign secretary?
I don't suppose it were any of those, my lord. I'm waiting for Jim Thodey. I got a hunch that he may have quite a lot to tell us.
Have you? Oysters have beards, but they don't always wag 'em.
If it comes to oysters, there's ways and means of opening them. And you needn't swallow them whole, neither. You're not planning to have another talk with Will Thodey?
No, not just at the moment, no. I don't think there's much to be done for a bit. But my brother Denver is off to Warbeach to open the new cut, so I expect I shall pop along there and join in the fun. So you're the engineer on the project?
One of them. It's been a big job, this has. We've shortened the course of the wash cut by 3 miles and driven the channel out into the wash beyond the mud banks, see? The whole secret with these Fen rivers is to bring all the water you can into its natural course. You'd think it was obvious, wouldn't you? But it's taken people hundreds of years to learn it.
I suppose all this extra water will go up the 30-foot drain.
That's right. The new cut will carry the water clean off and obviate the floods they used to get around Frogglesham and Lipsey Fen.
Will the 30-foot dike stand the strain?
Oh dear, yes. It was the silting in the outfall that caused the obstruction, you see.
And now you've cleared the Whale outfall, no doubt the obstruction will go somewhere else.
Very likely. These mud banks are always shifting about. But in time, I dare say they'll clear the whole thing. Unless, of course, they really take it into their hands to drain the wash and make a real job of it.
Just so.
But so far as it goes, this looks pretty good. It's to be hoped the old sluice gates over there will stand up to the strain, though.
Hold on! How about my old sluice gates?
Ah, hello again, our friend the sluice keeper.
They're strong enough. Excuse me a minute, my lord. I just want to see that they're making the dam good over there.
Ah. Now, look at all this here money they've been spending. Thousands. But as for them gates of mine, I reckon I can go and whistle for them. You look at this here great scour of water what's a-coming up. Now, where's that a-going to? It's got to go somewhere, isn't it?
No doubt. I understand it's to go up the 30-foot drain.
Nah, always interfering with things, they are.
Well, they're not interfering with your gates, anyway.
No, they ain't. And that's just where it is. Once you start interfering with things, you've got to go on. One thing lead to another. Let things bide, that's what I say. Don't go digging of them up and altering of them. Dig up one thing, and you've got to dig up another. Ah.
What ho, Blundell? Any news?
Ah, come in, my lord. Yes, we got hold of Jim Thodey, arrived back in England yesterday. We've informed him that we require him as a witness.
Good. Well done, super. What's his story about his departure from Fenchurch St. Paul?
Well, he says he took ill on the train after leaving Fenchurch, attributed the trouble to some sort of gastric influenza, felt too ill to proceed to his ship after arriving in London, and spent the day huddled over the fire in a public house near Liverpool Street. Spent the night at a guest house in London.
Got the address?
No, he couldn't recall the address.
How very convenient.
Says it was a clean and pleasant place.
Oh, very helpful of him.
Says that in the morning he was fit to continue his journey, though he still felt very weak and tottery. He'd seen English papers while he was abroad, mentioning the discovery of the body in the churchyard, but says that that's all he knows about it.
Did you tell him it was Deacon?
Oh, yes.
And how did he take that?
Looked startled enough, though, if you ask me, the shock wasn't caused by hearing the dead man's name.
Oh?
Oh, no. I think he were more shocked by hearing that the police knew who it was.
Hmm. The real question is, could Jim Thodey have somehow doubled back from London that day and still have returned in time to meet his ship? I suppose you'd better get the London police onto tracking down his public house near Liverpool Street. Not to mention his clean and pleasant lodging house.
Ah, my lord, well, I'm glad to say we've already made some progress on that. We found the public house where he spent the afternoon and they remember him. But there's no clue about the place he claims he spent the night at. Not surprisingly, really, because I don't think he spent the night in London at all.
Blundell, you astonish me. And no doubt you have some reason for believing that.
Yes, my lord. You see, we've established that Jim Thodey hired a motorbike in London on the evening of the 4th of January.
Did he indeed? Oh. Well, I think the next thing to do is to confront him with the facts. Have we got a witness to the hiring of this motorbike?
Yes, we have. Young lad, but he seems quite reliable. Gave a very exact description of Jim Thodey.
Ah. But look, before you do that...
Yes, my lord?
I think it is time, Blundell, for a spot of dirty work.
Dirty work, my lord?
Hmm. Let's get Will Thodey and his brother Jim together in one room. I think we could arrange something with one of the London police stations, don't you?
Well, yes, my lord, but...
You and I shall visit the room first and arrange a little surprise. And until then, they must not be allowed any contact with each other. Is that clear?
Yes, my lord, but I really don't...
No, no buts, Blundell. I shall first pay my farewells to the good rector, and I shall then meet you in London tomorrow. What do you think, Padre? Will the new washcut prove of immeasurable benefit to the Fens?
I'm sure I don't know, Lord Peter. Mm-hmm. They do say that it will greatly improve the flow of water and diminish the chances of flooding around Frogglesham.
Ah, I dare say you're right. As long as it doesn't improve the chances of flooding elsewhere.
And whatever do you mean?
Well, they're doing the whole thing piecemeal, Padre. There's no overall plan. The spirit of the Fens, it appears, is such, let the water go elsewhere, as long as it don't come my way.
Yes, yes, you're quite right. There's a certain lack of community spirit in that regard. Oh, I'm sorry, by the way. I was unable to attend the opening ceremony. I hear your brother delivered a most fitting speech.
Oh, yes. Yes, Denver's really quite a dab hand at putting over the right speech at the right time. But apart from that, you really didn't miss much, Padre. All in all, it was a moderately successful celebration. Three people fell into the river, four men and one old woman were had up for being drunk and disorderly, a motor car became entangled with a tradesman's cart, and young Go-to-Bed won first prize in the decorated motorcycle competition.
How delightful. Well, how is your case progressing?
Progress, Padre, is not a word that really comes to mind when dealing with this case. However, I am travelling to London this evening, and tomorrow Blundell and I shall be interrogating Will Foday and his brother Jim. And that, no doubt, will only throw us all into further confusion.
Oh, dear. I do hope poor Will Foday had nothing to do with that dreadful killing. It would really be...
Afternoon, Victor. Afternoon, my lord.
Good afternoon.
Oh, here's your car. Good afternoon. Well, I see you're keeping the old box tomb in good order.
Oh, I'm making old Samuel fine and clean for the summer. I've beaten old Samuel by 10 good years, I have. Lay me beside old Samuel, I says, for everybody sees I've beaten him. And I got Rector's promise, so I have. But they don't write no such beautiful poetry these days. You just take a look at this inscription, my lord.
Here lies the body of Samuel Snell, there for 50 years pulled the tenor bell. Through changes of this mortal race, he laid his blows and kept his pace. Till death the changes all did come to hunt him down and call him home. His wheel is broke, his rope is slacked, his clapper mute, his metal cracked. Yet when the great call summons him from ground, he shall be raised up, tunable and sound. Died 1697, aged 76 years. Ringing tailor Paul seems to be a healthy occupation. His servants live to a ripe old age, what?
So they do, young man, so they do. If so, they be faithful to un, and don't go a-angering on un. They bells do know well who's a-hauling on un. They can't abide a wicked man. Ain't that be right, Richter?
Yes, indeed.
But you, my lord, ain't got no call to be afeard of the bells, if so be as you follows righteousness.
Oh, quite. Yes, absolutely. Right, Blundell. Now let's have the other wire through here.
Right, sir.
No, as you were, under. Otherwise they'll spot it. Good. And I think the microphone, or whatever you call the beastly gadget, should be concealed over here, under the desk.
I'm not sure as the Chief Constable would be very pleased if he was to find out we were doing this to official police station premises, my lord.
I'm not sure as the Chief Constable is ever going to know about it, eh, Blundell?
Well, I suppose not, but I'm sure this is a breach of judge's rules, my lord.
Very likely, Blundell, but since when were you ever an ardent supporter of judge's rules, Now, let's see if the whole system works. I'll go through into the next room and see if the microphone's working properly. Righty-ho, Blundell. Talk to yourself for a bit. There's a good chap.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, my lord?
Recite something.
Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went...
That'll do nicely. All right, super. Everything's working. Now, if you would be so kind as to fetch Will Foday and brother Jim in here... They've not yet had a chance to talk with each other, so we'll leave them alone together for a short time and listen to what transpires.
Very good, my lord. I'll fetch them in now. They're in there now, my lord, so if there's any secrets, they'll come out now.
Splendid.
Well, now, William? Well, Jim?
How much do they know?
Pretty well everything by what I can make out.
Very well, then. You'd better let me take the blame. I'm not married, and there's Mary and the kids to be thought of, but in God's name, Will, couldn't you have got rid of that fellow without killing him?
That is just what I was going to ask you.
You mean to say it wasn't you who did away with Deacon?
Of course not. I'd be a fool to do that. I thought you'd killed him.
But I never laid a hand on him, Will, till after he was dead.
But see here, Jim, if you didn't kill him, who did?
Time for us to announce our presence, I think, Superintendent. Come on.
All right, let's have the rest of it.
What do you mean?
Now then, sit down, both of you, and let's start at the beginning, shall we?
You both realize that anything you say may be taken down in writing and later used in evidence against you? Right, go ahead, Will.
I want to make it clear as I can that my poor wife never knew one thing about it, first to last. Why, that was my old trouble all the time, how to keep it from her. Well, let me see. It was on the night of December the 30th, and I was coming home pretty late, and I saw this light a-moving about near the church. Well, I think maybe it's Rector, or maybe it's Potty Pete, but I goes over to look, because it do seem a bit strange-like. And when I gets near, I hear something moving about, bumping like in the chancel.
And so you went inside?
Yes. In I goes, and there's a fella tugging at a ladder. And on the table I see a kind of lantern and something else that has no right to be there. And that's a revolver. So I catches hold of the revolver and I makes him put his hands up. And then he starts laughing and he says, "Think again, Will Thoday." And I says, "How do you know my name?" And then I looked again and I said, "My God, it's Jeff Deacon." And he said, "Yes, and you're the man that's married my wife." And he laughed again. And then he came over me just what it all meant.
How did he know you'd married Mary? He didn't get it from Cranton.
It seemed he'd been scouting round, like, in the village. Of course, I thought he must be meaning to blackmail Mary. I didn't realise it was the emeralds he was after.
Why didn't you inform the police immediately?
Well, I was in half a mind to give him up to the police and just face the scandal about me and Mary. But when I thought about her and the kids, well, I couldn't face it. And he knew just how I stood the devil. So he stood there grinning at me. In the end, I made a devil's bargain with him. I said I'd hide him and give him the money to get out of the country, providing he kept quiet about everything. But I didn't trust him, so before I went to fetch the money, I made him go up the belfry stairs in front of me, and then I tied him up. It wasn't difficult. I had the revolver, you see.
So you got hold of a rope from the rope chest, and you tied him up to a beam in the bell chamber.
That's right, yes, my lord. I tied him up good and proper, though it were a bit of a job, with the rope being so thick. "Stay you here," I said, "and I'll bring you something to eat in the morning, and see you out of the country before you're 24 hours older." Well, cursed like the devil, but I paid no attention to him. Well, next morning I felt ill, but I couldn't stop to think about that. I took Deacon some bread and cheese and beer, and I left him an old coat of mine so he wouldn't freeze. And I tied him up by his elbows and ankles, leaving his hands free so he could help himself to the victuals but not untie himself.
But had you made any plans for shipping him off?
Oh, yes, my lord. I went over to Walbeach and had a talk with a pal of Jim's, a queer old skipper on a Dutch cargo boat that was lying there. I had a word with him, and he agreed to wait until 10 o'clock that night and take my passenger, no questions asked. £250 was the price he wanted, and I gave him 50 then and there and held on to the £200 till I got Deacon on board. I started back, and then I got too ill to continue, and, well, you know what happened afterwards.
Oh, that's very clear. I needn't tell you that you were compounding a serious felony by helping a convicted murderer to escape from justice. Speaking as a policeman, I'm shocked. Speaking as a human being, I've every sympathy. Now, Jim, I imagine your part of it comes in here.
Well, sir, as you know, poor Will was brought back in a terrible state, and we thought for a day or two he was pretty well gone. He was out of his head and kept on calling out that he must go down to the church, but we put that down to the bell-ringing business. Then, when Mary was out of the room, he clutched at my hand and started talking about keys and money and someone in the belfry. He kept on saying, "Don't let Mary know." Well, I thought he must be delirious-like, but then I looked in his coat and found a set of keys and a wad of money. Well, I began to think there must be something in it.
So you went to the church?
Yes, that's right.
What day was that?
I reckon it was the 2nd of January. I went up into the belfry and, well, there he was.
He must have been pretty fed up with things by then.
Fed up? He was dead and cold.
Starved to death?
Not he. There was a bit of cheese beside him and near half a loaf of bread and two bottles of beer, one empty and one full. And he hadn't died of cold neither, as you might expect. I've seen men that died of exposure and they died peaceful, curled up like kittens mostly, as if they'd gone in their sleep. No, he died on his feet, and whatever it was, he'd seen it coming to him. He'd struggled like a tiger against the ropes, working at them till he could get upright, and they'd cut through the stuff of his jacket and through his socks, and his face. My God, sir, I've never seen anything like it. His eyes staring open, and a look in them as if he'd looked down into hell. It fair shook me. Well, I couldn't make out who he was. I found papers with the name Paul Taylor, but that didn't help, and then I had a look at his hands.
Yeah, now we're coming to it.
Yes, my lord. I didn't know Deacon that well, but I suddenly wondered if it might be him after all, so I looked at his hands, because he had a big scar on his hand where he'd fallen one day carrying a tray with a glass jug on it. I'd seen that scar, and I'd never forget it. When I saw that, my lord, I knew it was. Well, then, I hadn't much doubt about what had happened. As God's my witness, Will, I couldn't blame you, only I wished it had happened in a fair fight.
If it had happened, Jim, it would have been in a fair fight. I might have killed him, but I wouldn't have killed him when he was tied up. You might have known that.
Well, so I might. But it seemed at the time as there was no way out of it. I had to think quick what to do. Then I remembered Lady Thorpe's funeral was fixed for the Saturday. It seemed to me that I might put him in her grave and he'd never be found.
So you went up to London and then doubled back by motorbike?
Yes, that's right. You know all about that. Well, I got back to Fenchurch St. Paul very late. It wasn't a pleasant job. Rolling that body down the ladders, it gave me the heebie-jeebies. And those bells. I was expecting all the time to hear them speak. I never had liked the sound of bells. Well, you'd think they were alive sometimes, and they could talk. When I was a boy, I read a story in an old magazine about a bell that called out after a murderer. You'll think I'm soft talking that way, but it made an impression on me, and I can't forget it.
The Rosamond, I know it well. It called, "Help, Jehan, help, Jehan." Gave me the grooves, too.
That's the one, my lord. Anyway, I got the body down to the grave, and I was just about to put it in when I remembered that the grave might be opened and the body recognized, so I gave him some good hard blows with the spade across the face. That was a bad bit, sir. And the hands, I'd recognize them, and so might other people. I got out my jackknife and...
With the big sugar nippers, they nipped off his flippers.
Yes, my lord. I made them into a parcel with his papers. I put the ropes and his hat down the well. Then I filled up the grave and put the wreaths back as tidily as I could. Then I cleaned the tools. I used the sexton spade and put them back where I found them. Then I had to go up and clean the belfry. There was still the cheese there, see, and the two bottles of beer.
Three. You missed one.
Oh, did I? Well, now, I locked up everything tight, and then I wondered what to do with the keys. Finally, I thought I'd best leave them in the vestry, as though Rector had forgotten them. He's very absent-minded. All but the key of the porch, and I left that in the lock. It was the best I could think of.
And the parcel?
Ah, I threw that into the 30-foot drain, 12 miles off from Fenchurch. I didn't quite know what to do with Will's old coat, but in the end, I posted it back to him with a note. I just said, "Many thanks for the loan. I've put away what you left in the belfry." Well, I couldn't be more open for fear Mary might undo the parcel and read the letter.
You'll have to forgive me, Jim. But naturally, I fancied you'd done the job. Only I kept on hoping that maybe he died natural.
He didn't do that.
Then who killed him?
I'm sure you didn't, Jim. If you had, you'd have accepted the suggestion that he died of exposure. Somehow I'm inclined to believe that your brother didn't do it either. Though you're both accessories after the fact, you'd have an awkward time with the prosecuting counsel, both of you. But personally, I'm inclined to believe you both.
Thank you, sir.
Is there any reason why Will and Mary shouldn't go ahead and get remarried now, Super?
Well, I don't know as there is. Not if these two are telling the truth. Proceedings, there may be. You two ain't out the wood yet, but as to getting married, I don't see any great harm in it. We've got their story, and I don't know as poor Mary can add very much to it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blundell.
We may have to talk to the two of you again, you understand that. But if the superintendent is agreeable, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be free to go.
Thank you, my lord.
Yes, thank you, my lord.
Now make sure the desk sergeant is informed of your whereabouts. I don't want you two disappearing on me. Just go down the corridor and turn first right.
Thank you, Mr. Blundell.
Thank you.
Well, my lord, I have to admit that that little trick of yours seems to have paid off. We've learned a great deal about what was going on in Fenchurch that night.
Yes, we have. There is, of course, just one little thing that we haven't sorted out, Blundell.
What's that, my lord?
Oh, it's nothing much. That's a trifling matter, really. But we still don't know who killed Deacon.